Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Owl Post is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, my friend, my guiding light, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I wish everybody could have seen the hand motions you did there.
It's very reading rainbow-like.
That or one of like Von Trapp kids, like...
Oh. Take your pick.
There you go. We are excited to be back with you. We are on chapter 22 of The Order of the Phoenix, St. Mundungo's Hospital for Magical Maladies and Injuries. That is a mouthful, so don't try to say that quickly. But before we get really rolling with everything, we had a brand new 5-star review over on iTunes that said brilliant 5 stars, and it's Champa Chonga. So great name, reviewer name. But they said, I once took every audiobook track and put them end to end in one big playlist set on repeat, round and round. I found this podcast and have a bunch of catching up to do. Look forward to every chapter.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yay.
What's funny is, dear listener, my wife pretty much does the same thing. She listens to every single book as she's going to sleep, and she starts with one and then just goes to the next and goes to the next. And when she's done, she just turns it back to the book one and then starts it all over again. So she's listened to them more times than I've read them, like by far.
I definitely had a period of time at work where I needed something I was very familiar with but enjoyed, and was kind of sick of just putting on like a radio or a Pandora station because I get the same songs over and over again. And I think I just ran all the Harry Potters through and got done, and I was like, oh, I guess I could just do that again. So
yeah.
I totally can relate.
Which is so great, you know. And I've done the audiobooks when I've been on long trips, you know, which is fantastic if you're driving a lot, you know, like hours upon hours at a time. They are perfect for listening to. So yeah, great stuff. Well, you can find us on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you happen to be on either of those, though, we do appreciate star ratings and reviews. You know, let people know what you think of the show, help other people find the show. We'd really appreciate it, and we'll read your review out on the show. So thank you to everyone who's done that before, and you could find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We've also got thenerdparty.com, and once you're over there, you can send us an email if you'd like at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose Owlpost, and that comes to Drea and I. So, you know, Drea, the last time we left... Harry was being rushed to Dumbledore's office by McGonagall, and she tells Ron to come with her as well, and they end up in, well, what is a very busy office. There's a lot happening in Dumbledore's office when they arrive.
Yeah, it starts with McGonagall. I love that it starts with McGonagall trying to tell the story. And Harry's like, no, you're doing it wrong, essentially. He just kind of corrects her. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, then why don't you just do it, Mr. Potter? And like, I can so see Maggie Smith just being like, well, then, you know, like, it was a great little moment for the McGonagall character to be like, okay, then. And he tells a story, and I like that she mentions that as he tells the fact that he felt like he was there and he felt like he was the snake, that he's like, even saying it out loud, it sounded just ridiculous. He's like, no one's going to believe me. This is a joke. Why are we here? And then the fact that Dumbledore sort of like immediately sprang into action and did something about it from there, Harry's both confused and a little afraid. And Ron is just like terrified.
Yeah, because, you know, before he starts even telling the story, Dumbledore's doing stuff. Like, he's talking to portraits, and he's, like, got weird instruments on his desk that are emitting weird puffs of smoke, and he's doing these, like, experiments or whatever, and they have no idea what's really going on
And he's not really like looking at Harry. It's like having a conversation with someone who's distracted, and you're like, am I inconveniencing you? Or maybe you can.
I'm sorry. Did I wake you up in the middle of the night with somebody dying? My bad.
Right? Like, it's one of those moments where you're like, hey, right here, making the eye gesture, you know, the fingers. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is. It's really interesting. And again, like you mentioned, you know, you've got them. He tells the story, and Dumbledore kind of confirms. He's like, so was it from the snake's point of view? Were you watching like in a third person where you could see all the action happening? Or was it more like a first person, like you are the snake? And Harry's like, yes, that's it. And then Harry thinks to himself, that's kind of a weird question, but at least Dumbledore's getting it. And Dumbledore's like, so is Arthur seriously injured? And I love how Harry's like, yes, like, why is everybody so slow on the uptake? He's dying. We got to get to him now. And then, like you said, immediately, then Dumbledore gets into action and starts calling these portraits to work for him and go get all of this information, which not only that, but I was also really impressed, too, that he also sends Fox off as well on a mission, and she just disappears. Like, it was, I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen that before, that Fox can just kind of pop in and out wherever they wish, which was really cool.
And he just starts setting all these things in motion, and no one really understands what they are or why they're so, I don't know, they seem so critical, and no one's really clear why. And this moment is very different from the movie. A similar series of events happens, but the whole environment is different. In this case, Dumbledore is relatively calm, setting things into motion, understands the severity of what's happening here. But Harry is just very confused, right? And you know, later we find out a little bit more about how he's feeling in that moment, but he's not angry. He doesn't yell. That doesn't manifest at all like it does in the movie. And it feels more natural this way, right? Like, yes, Harry's very pent up, but, you know, I think he's more worried. And the whole time you're hearing kind of his inner dialogue about how worried he is that he did something, right? He thinks he's to blame. He thinks he's at fault. And everyone seems to be giving him, you know, like these accolades. So it's a very different kind of situation than we see in the movie. I feel like the movie kind of just shoves a bunch of emotions all together. but yeah, it's a very sort of terrifying situation to not know what's going on. And we don't really find out either entirely.
No, we don't. And because part of that too is that Dumbledore kind of goes back to his instruments with this, you know, it's this weird thing with tiny puffs of green smoke and from this like silver tube on the top. And it's just this weird thing on his desk, and it breaks into a coiled air where a serpent's head grew out of the end of it. And Dumbledore seems to get what's going on because he's like, ooh, naturally, but in essence divided. And you're like,
what does that even mean?
Yeah, I mean,
you sound like a crazy person.
He does. And Harry is kind of having this WTF moment of like, what is going on here? And Dumbledore seems to get everything he needs from it, because then he puts that away. And then, you know, he gets the news from one of the portraits about how, you know, they found Mr. Weasley and they've taken him to St. Mundungo's. And he tells McGonagall, look, I need you to get all of the Weasley kids. I need to bring them here. And then he gives Phineas Black, which was one of the previous headmasters, a message for Sirius at the Black household, because they're going to...
Yeah, so he does that. But the whole interesting thing is that, you know, he calls upon this portrait who kind of like talks back, which is very unusual for all of these.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's happening.
I love that.
I love that she's giving some sass here. And Harry's like, I recognize that voice and doesn't really know why. And then you put together that the way Dumbledore has been communicating with the Order is via Phineas Black, because he is a portrait on Sirius's wall at the headquarters. So that's kind of a like little closed loop that they put together here, kind of inadvertently. And he sort of begrudgingly goes and does what he's asked to do after the other portraits harass him into doing it, remind him
that was
there.
Fantastic.
I know. This is your duty as a headmaster, blah, blah, blah. So
I thought it was so much fun. You could just hear one of them in that British accent. Insubordination, sir! You know, dereliction of duty! We are honor bound to serve the headmaster of Hogwarts. Like, you can just hear them all yelling at him, and it's just really, he's like, oh, fine.
Well, and it's mostly just that he's lazy. He like doesn't want to wake up because it's really late, and he's like, okay, fine. Like, it was funny.
It's interesting too, because you know, they get the Weasley kids there and they tell them, hey, you're going to be going, this is what happened, your dad's been attacked, he's at St. Mundungo's right now, he's going to be fine, but I'm sending you in a portkey to the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix there at Grimwald Place, and you know, your mother will meet you. And they get off just in time because Fox comes back with his warning that Umbridge is on the move, and they're trying to do all this before she realizes that students are out of bed and all this has happened, and they're able to get away. But right as they are getting away with the portkey, Harry has this very strange moment between him and Dumbledore as they kind of meet eyes, and it gets real weird.
It does, and he just sort of instantly has this desire to attack him, like what happened to Mr. Weasley. Also, right before this happens, we find out what Dumbledore sent Fox to do, which was to be a lookout. And, you know, he has a little sign that he drops, and it turns out that Umbridge is on her way or around. And he sends McGonagall. He's like, do whatever it takes. Tell her whatever you need to buy me more time. And it just kind of speaks to like the severity of the situation at Hogwarts, not just this one in general, not just, you know, what happened to Arthur Weasley and stuff like that, but the fact that the headmaster has to set up a warning for someone and use his, you know, his staff to distract them by whatever means necessary. Like, that just really imparts onto you that what is happening here is not normal. Like, this is not what you should expect. This should not be the way the school is run. There's something extremely dysfunctional happening here. Yeah, and then all of that happens, and Harry just, like, he, you know, they portkey back to Sirius's, and he just is like, I just wanted to attack him.
Yeah, and Harry is feeling, you know, very strange in all this, because people are calling him like a hero and stuff, and he's having a really hard time because he's having all these strange feelings, especially that moment with Dumbledore. And of course, he's trying to then explain to the rest of the Weasleys, who don't know exactly what's going on, you know, because Ron's been there to hear the story, but nobody else has. So they're, you know, at the Grimwald Place there, and it's funny too, because Fred and George are creating this scene about how they're going to go down to St. Mundungo's, and Sirius is like, no, you can't. And he's trying to explain, look, it won't make sense, the fact that, you know, it'll be even weirder when they find out that, if they were to find out that we know because of Harry and this strange connection. And of course, you know, the kids don't care about those things because they can't understand the ramifications of everything that's going on. But finally, Sirius is able to calm them down. He gets them into the kitchen. He gets them some butter beers. And then they just wait. And it's just this waiting game of trying to see if Arthur Weasley is going to be okay. And this just leads to more time of Harry having time to think. And it's not necessarily time that he really wants, you know, like, he doesn't want to be thinking about what just happened and be kind of, he's just stewing in his brain with what's been going on. So, and I feel really bad for him.
Well, this is a really unique opportunity for Sirius too. I mean, we've had a lot of instances where he sort of acts immature, right? He wants to do this. He turns into a dog and takes Harry to the platform, right? And this is the instance where Fred throws something back in Sirius's face about, why wasn't it you? Why aren't you doing something? How can you speak to this? You're not, you know, you're just sitting around the house, essentially, which we know hits Sirius hard, and we know it hits him where it hurts, which is probably partially why Fred said it, you know. But he kind of remains calm and keeps his composure and takes a deep breath and goes, that's not the point. like, we need to wait. You know, I know you're upset. And he lets it go. And that's kind of one of those moments where you're like, okay, Sirius is growing. Sirius is learning. You know, he's handling this in a very adult way. And that was a very easy moment where he could have just flown off the handle and he didn't.
I agree with you. It is one of those interesting moments where Sirius shows himself to be the adult in the room. And it really does show that there's a lot more to this character. And it is a moment, too, where I think he is truly, regardless of what, you know, Fred throws in his face, right, that he cares about these kids. Like, he cares about what's going on. And, of course, he would like to be doing more, but this is what he can do at this moment, and it's to try and take care of them as they wait to hear about their dad. And, you know, he doesn't have that experience, right, of I'm sure what it would feel like to feel like this for your family, but I'm sure he's imagining what it's like, and he's putting himself in their shoes, and it's not good. Like, the situation these poor kids are in is not a situation that they would want to be in. And I really love, you know, we finally get the message, you know, from Fox leaves another message from Molly saying, your dad's alive, he's in Madungo's, stay there, I'll send for you, and I'll give you news as soon as I can, so that at least they can feel a little bit better. But it's still, you know, it's frustrating for them because it's still a waiting game, and it's like 5 in the morning before Miss Weasley comes in, and so the kids are kind of being in and out of sleep, and they haven't really known what's going on for the most part, other than the dad's kind of alive at the moment, you know, like, just, it sounds like it's been the worst evening ever.
Yeah, if you've ever been in a situation where you're waiting on medical news, or someone's undergoing a surgery or something like that, like, you know what that waiting is like and how painful it is, and not knowing, and then not being able to be there and not really truly understanding why you can't be there. I mean, the whole thing is just really unfortunate. And Sirius, like, kind of recommends they go to bed, and gets, like, just stares from everyone. And it's like, all right, well, we are just going to keep sitting here awkwardly then. You know, and once Mrs. Weasley gets home and assures them that everything's okay, everyone sort of has a sigh of relief. And, you know, everyone decides, like, to take a nap, and they'll go over there later on. And except for Harry, who can't seem to sleep because he's worried that if he goes to sleep, he'll attack someone. Because in his mind, he did this. This is his doing.
Because there's this little moment, too, where he pulls Sirius aside as they're all making breakfast and everything. And he's like, he's trying to explain what happened. He's trying to explain what he thinks happened. And he's so worried that he is a part of it. Like, that he, you know, there's something wrong with him. And Sirius keeps telling him, you know, no, it's okay. It's just the after effects of the dream or the vision or whatever it was. It's not you. And Harry's having a very hard time with that. And like you said, when they all go to take a nap, he doesn't really end up taking a nap. He has so Harry doesn't get a lot of sleep in this chapter.
No, and I'm sure that doesn't help him to sort of rationally figure out what's going on here. You know, and then when they all kind of wake up, they're excited because they get to go and visit Mr. Weasley. When they're escorted by Tonks and Mad-Eye, and everyone kind of dresses in street clothes and heads on out, and we learn that St. Madungo's has a very interesting front.
Yeah, I kind of love that it's this, like, department store that's been closed for a long time and says it's being remodeled, but of course it's never being remodeled because it's actually this hospital for the wizards. And I love that we get a chance to hang out with Tonks and Mad-Eye again, because they're the ones that are bringing them there. Tonks is even asking Harry, you know, about his experience, like, are you sure there's no, like, seer blood in your family? You know, like, are you, you know, and Harry's like, no, thinking about how, you know, Trelawney, and that he felt insulted by that, you know, because that's his only experience with that. And they finally get a chance to see Mr. Weasley. And, you know, the experience of kind of being in somewhere very new in the wizarding world was fun. I really enjoyed the way that she describes all of this and how they think doctors are rubbish, that, you know, you really want a magical healer. So that was kind of fun. And she really does a good job of kind of painting the picture of what this place is like before they get a chance to go and see Mr. Weasley, which was a lot of fun.
Right. It was. It really was. And it was interesting to see how they sort of organized everything, and everything's kind of categorized. I really like, there's still some whimsy to it. You know, there's unbreakable jinxes and, you know, inappropriate applied curse, all this other stuff. And I do like that there's at the bottom of sort of the map of the hospital, there's something about, like, if you're unable to speak, please let one of our witches know and they will help you. And I just thought it had a little bit of whimsy to it. And we find Mr. Weasley in the snake bite, or the bite area, where there's apparently a whole area for people being bitten, which is terrifying. And he looks like he's in remarkably good spirits and in remarkably good health for having gone through what he just went through.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that was really interesting. You know, Mr. Weasley seems to be doing well. He, you know, even mentions, you know, I'd be out of here if we could get the bleeding to stop. They could take the bandages off. But every time they do, you know, it just keeps bleeding. And so they just haven't figured out exactly what it is that's going to, you know, to heal me completely. But otherwise, I'm okay. I keep drinking this blood replenishing potion every hour, and, you know, I'm fine. You know, at least I'm not the guy over there who got bit by a werewolf, you know. So and it's very interesting, because, you know, then the kids keep trying to get out of him, especially the twins, you know, what had happened, where he was and all that. And Molly and Arthur keep saying, you know, we're not talking about that here. We're not talking about that here. We're not talking about that here. And it really frustrates the kids, but it also frustrates Molly and Arthur, because the kids finally get sent out of the room. And of course, they decide that they want to use the extendable ears to hear what's going on. And honestly, what they overhear shocks everyone, especially Harry.
Yeah, they essentially hear that Dumbledore saw something like this coming, and that this isn't, like, surprising to anyone, which then it kind of explains the reaction, why things kind of happened the way they did. And you learn that essentially they think that Harry is being controlled by Lord Voldemort.
Yeah, the idea that there is some kind of control, or that there's some kind of connection there, it leaves everybody speechless and staring at Harry like he has the plague. Which, that's the unfortunate end of this chapter. Like, that, it just ends right there.
She keeps doing it in this book. She ends on such a good hook that keeps you wanting to go on. But it shocks just everybody as to what is going on. And you sort of learn that he sent a snake in to find something, but nobody knows what that something is. And, you know, everyone's kind of wondering how that was even possible. And, it leaves you with so many. I mean, it answers a few things, but at the same time, it leaves so many more questions. Mm-hmm. It's pretty fascinating.
Well, and then, you know, we do get the idea that Mr. Weasley is on some sort of guard duty, and it's lucky that he was there, otherwise the snake would have had much more time to look around. And so you would get this furthering of the plot that the Order of the Phoenix is in, like, this cold war between it and the followers of Voldemort, and that's why it hasn't erupted into full-out war yet, because Voldemort wants something. So I like the way that this chapter subtly adds to that mystery.
Yep, it tells you so much more. I mean, it tells you the story is so much bigger than you sort of anticipate it being. And then you're like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. Got it. So, yeah, it's just, it'll be really interesting to see where this takes. It'll actually be really interesting to see how they handle the news that they just got about Harry.
Well, because, you know, the next chapter is going to be chapter 23, Christmas on the Closed Ward. So we're definitely going to be continuing this story. But, you know, before we get there, because we got to wait another week, Drea, where can, you know, everybody catch up with you, talk to you, see what's going on, and maybe just drop by and say hi?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman or on Twitter at PCFChick.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, or Letterboxd under the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, where we talk about Star Wars each and every week. And then you can find me on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One's called The Orb, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The other is the 602 Club, where we talk about all of the fandoms that we love, not just one. And then you can find me doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But we want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.